The Spinoff Podcast Network. Skinny are helping you show how smart you are with the 1Q Quiz, an all-new, super challenging and super quick daily quiz built by The Spinoff. Every Monday, Skinny are giving you the chance to prove you're smart with the Skinny Extra Credit question. Get it right, and you'll get the chance to score yourself some Skinny Extra mobile credit so you can text, call, or even video call your group chat and gloat about how big your brain is. T's and C's apply.
Raising capital or taking your business to the world? Investment Fix has everything you need to make it happen. This season, we're exploring the US market, the opportunities it offers, what it takes to grow a business there, and the best way to approach investors. The Investment Fix podcast. Tune in today.
Tēnā koutou katoa, no mai, haere mai, ki dietary requirements. The team is back together. Sophie and Alice are both in the house with me at the same time.
Hooray!
It was funny seeing you guys wish each other Happy New Year. It's already fucking February.
Yeah. I know. We've missed each other because a few people have said
it's been a long time.
Alice is there and you're not. And then I've done a couple without you. So
last time Simon forgot to mention that I was my absence.
I felt really bad about that.
It was like I'd never existed.
Oh, I remembered at the end, but then I thought I'd just not mention it because it, you know, felt good to nigger.
People tuning in must have just been like, what the fuck? Where is the heart Where's and soul the star of this of the podcast? Show?
Yeah. But it's been really nice to receive your feedback in some really strange and weird places, including meetings. So shout out to Benny. Keep hanging out with dietary requirements.
Love you, Benny.
Like, share, and subscribe. You know, get your mum onto it. And of course, we wouldn't be here without the support of our wonderful food sponsor, Freedom Farms. They make the best free-range eggs and delicious bacon and pork. So please support them and buy their products from your supermarket. And we also wouldn't be here without the Spinoff members. This is our wonderful people who choose to support our work. So please, if you're not a member, become a member. You can get a really cool
tea towel.
I'll send you a dietary requirements badge.
He'll sign it for you.
I'll sign it. I'll bake you a pie. If you, honestly, first person to sign up on the back of this, I'll send you a steak and cheese pie. And if you're a vegetarian, I'll think of something.
Yeah, he'll do it.
You make a good pie, Si.
So big food news of the month, I guess that we can call it, is the closure, sort of sudden, surprising closure of Antoine's. Tony Astle and his wife Beth have decided not to reopen this year. Feels, you know, really sad. Auckland Institution, 47 years it's been in the game. During those 47 years, I never went. Sophie appears to be the only regular, which feels very on Emerald Gilmore's brand.
Yeah, well, Emerald Gilmore used to own a restaurant with Tony Astle in downtown Auckland called Galway Street Bar and Brasserie, which is now where Mexico is in Britomart. So I haven't been there a lot, but I've been there over the years. There's a story about my sister being 2 weeks old under the table. My mum and dad decided to go out for dinner and they went to Antoine's.
That's very Gilmore.
Yeah, Mimi was under the table, which is...
which is where Odette spent lots of her life.
Where we all spent a lot of our childhoods. And I remember going for sort of family events. A few of the iconic dishes kind of stick out in my mind. I'll never eat licorice ice cream, or I'll never think of Antoine's without thinking about licorice ice cream.
That sounds delicious.
Yeah, they do a really beautiful chicken liver parfait. They have a chicken and leek pie. So they had two menus. One was the classics, and then there was always the new menu. And so food was French, but had a mix of old and new.
People who are not familiar with Antoine's, there's probably lots of people. 47 had been in Auckland for 47 years and was very classic French cooking.
Yeah, so when Auckland didn't have restaurants serving international cuisine, that's when Antoine's was born, and it's at that time fine dining food was French cuisine.
Yeah,
and so that was the only kind of restaurant to open, and so it had all the formalities of what a restaurant back then would have had. I think there's a really cool...
And did they hold on to that until...
Yeah, I think there's a really cool, like, expose on the whole history of Antoine's that was once written by Denison or something, but it talks about how right from the beginning there you had to ring the doorbell and someone would come and let you in and greet you. So it was kind of like going to someone fancy's house, you know? They... always a handsome waiter would open the door wearing a three-piece suit and he'd be charming as hell. And right up until the end, Tony was in the kitchen cooking with the chefs. And there's all sorts of stories about him throwing pans and hurling abuse at the chefs and his wonderful wife, Beth, kind of being the wind beneath his wings or holding the whole thing together. So I think, you know, there, it would be really nice to see some more stories from Antoine's. And it sits in a really unassuming villa at the top of the Parnell village. So it doesn't stand out as like an iconic venue either. So it'll be really interesting to see what goes in next.
Mm. And just, I guess, one of those pioneers in helping New Zealand discover what good food is, because imagine going out to dinner in Auckland 50 years ago or anywhere in New Zealand, like what would have been.
Well, I think everyone was
chicken,
eating that kind of
soggy veg
British cuisine at that time. Yeah, and I think, you know, although there's a whole lot of la-di-da to it and it's not the kind of restaurant that I'm looking for when I go out now, I think that there's something really wonderful about it's like a tension between being pretentious and being a champion of Auckland. So like bringing something that's really international to Auckland, because why shouldn't Auckland have something that's internationally good, has a real place, and I think it's valuable. So it'll be sad for sure that it's over, and many, many people will be sad about that. My mum spoke about they did a 40-year celebration, this was 7 years ago, and a huge fundraiser, and they donated all the money to charity. And, you know, people have always been willing to show up and pay and celebrate Antoine. So it's end of an era.
It's absolutely a space for that sort of cooking and experience. It's not a huge space.
Yeah. You know,
I think there's maybe Antoine's and Sit at the French Cafe.
Hmm. I mean, if I had to guess, I'd say they've been battling in recent years because... You know, things have progressed so much. The landscape around them has gone from being a desert to being completely overpopulated with fantastic restaurants. So we don't have the population to sustain that. I'm sure the competition's been tough. So, you know, it's probably timely as well.
I mean, did it feel going there? Did it feel a bit like a throwback?
In a funny way, yes, but also just felt like an overseas experience.
Right.
It's not. There was nothing Kiwi about the feel of the place. Yeah. It was kind of like a yellow dining room with dining, white tablecloths and dining chairs. But it's in a villa, so it has like two different rooms and there's like two different levels and then an outdoor terrace. So, yeah. I mean, as I said, it kind of felt like going to someone, like a fancy old house or like you were going to an aristocratic bloody chateau for dinner or something.
With a private chef.
Was the vibe, yeah.
My mum was actually maitre d' of Antoine's when she was at university.
Which would have been an epic job at the time, right?
You know, for a law student, it would be perfect, like really well paid and
probably
get to serve a few judges.
Was she proud?
Yeah. She's always like, you know.
Snuck it into the combo.
Yeah, throwing it out there.
Yeah. Good on her.
Apparently, I'm just reading something from Metro from 2013.
Alice is doing active live research.
It said they didn't have EFTPOS.
Yeah, for a long time they didn't.
What do you
have
do?
EFTPOS.
Just pay with American Express or
credit cards
cash.
Get zip zapped.
Yes. I've had my credit card zip zapped before.
Funny.
Hopefully, not my credit card, but someone else's that I was dying with.
I doubt it was your credit card.
Yeah. There was a lot of things that Tony was very famously stubborn about,
right,
and
yeah.
held off. With the convention. I mean, I think there was something about him with the EFTPOS fees as well on charging them. And there's a whole lot of... He's a real character.
Right,
so there's been a bunch of newsworthy stands that he's taken
I think
over
that adds
politics.
That adds mystique, though. Like, you know, if you're going to run a restaurant like that, you've got to have a narrative.
Yeah.
You can't just be great food and... shiny tablecloths.
I used to like put on events for the National Party and stuff as well. Like it's got a very, it's just a, It's a very particular vibe.
Yeah.
Nor is it demographic.
A few years ago, I wrote a story for Metro about the like legends of the Auckland restaurant scene.
Pop that in the show notes, will you, doll?
Yeah, I think it's online. It was people like Krishna from Prego and Ji Ling Ching and...
I think Chris Rupe was
Chris Rupe. Who's that guy who's also called Tony, who I think also used to work with my mum?
Tony from Clooney, that's now Tony Stewart?
Maybe his name's not Tony.
Oh, I know who you mean, yeah, Harbourside.
Yeah. Yeah, that guy.
His name is Tony.
Yeah.
And I've also forgotten his surname temporarily.
And I asked Tony Astle if he would be involved, and he didn't want to do it. So that was...
Shy.
You know, well, his legacy doesn't need celebration, you know?
Yeah.
So Antoine's feels like, you know, it's sad that it's shut down before Valentine's Day. Feels like a very great place to go as a couple. Do you guys go out to dinner to a restaurant on Valentine's Day? To me, that feels like I couldn't imagine anything worse. Just sitting in a room with stacks of other couples.
I used to love working in restaurants on Valentine's Day.
I just found it hard because there was always so many tables.
But it's a bit hilarious because, like, the whole restaurant gets split into twos.
Yeah.
And you can see a variety of things happening. Like, there's people on first dates. There's people that are madly in love. People that have got their very first babysitter.
People on last dates.
Yeah, people on last dates. People that have been together for, like, 30 years. It's just... a hilarious situation, the whole thing.
Oh, it was cheesy Tony menus? It was Tony Adcock, sorry.
Yeah, there you go.
Like Judith Tibron.
Cheesy menus. There was like, you know, always something really chocolatey and just, it's a lot.
Valrhona chocolate.
You'd probably be into that sort of carry on with you. Cheese.
Made with rose petals. No, because of my, because of marrying a florist, we actively hate Valentine's Day.
Right.
It's the most hellish day of the
year. I've noticed you've tapped out this year.
Yeah, we have, just because it's on a Sunday, Millie doesn't want to work 12 days in a row with two little boys as well. And the margins are so slim because the prices at the flower auction go through the roof.
Just not worth it.
It's not this year anyway.
Yeah.
Not with, you know, and the weekends are so important to the family with the little boys, so not this year.
That's nice.
It's always funny when you accidentally go out for dinner on Valentine's Day. Like, you just go out with some friends or family, and it's like, oh, fuck.
In my girls' WhatsApp this week, one of the girls said,
girls WhatsApp,
I've got a question. I've been meaning to catch up with this guy for ages, and I've accidentally suggested that we catch up on Sunday for a drink.
Nah,
and she's like, now I'm feeling really uncomfortable about whether I should front foot it and say, just so you know, I didn't know it was Valentine's Day, or I should go one step further and say, I didn't know it was Valentine's Day, shall we change it? And the girls are like, whoa, 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 you don't need to cancel the date, but you can just say, like, you know, recognizing this is a bit of an awkward occasion, but let's have a lol about it.
Yeah.
But is she down to fuck? Like, is it...
Probably not on a Sunday afternoon.
No, no, no. But is it romantic or are they like old friends?
No. It's not a platonic catch up. I don't think. Just but it would convert. Be the first drink.
Just use Valentine's Day as like a little bit of added momentum.
She should just roll up with some flowers and chocolates.
Mm.
She could really lean into it.
So what's that actually shit but tries to be fancy Cadbury box called?
Continental.
There we go, Continental.
I love a Continental.
Like, what is the branding trying to achieve there? It's like, we're from the European
continent.
I'm not familiar. Is that a
gold
one?
I feel like they don't know if Continental still exists. We're talking about
it. It's like
an
upgrade of roses.
It's good. It's fucking good. It's real fancy.
What does Continental even mean? Like, what is a Continental brand?
From the continent. Of a continent.
As in from Europe. I think that's what it means.
So.
It's like.
So in England they have sausages and eggs, and on the continent they have cereal.
Yeah, that makes no sense because they don't have cereal.
They talk about it being of the continent, don't they?
Doesn't quite work.
Just a stupid expression, and they should really change. They should change the name of that box to, like, you know, a little bit fancy.
Australia.
In COVID times, that would be wild to be able to go to Australia.
I used to get heaps of PR stuff when I used to get more PR shit in previous jobs. I still get quite a lot of stuff. Thank you, PRs. But on Valentine's Day,
you never actually write about.
Yeah,
stuff
I think they've started to realise I don't. Whereas
it's
like
never
cuisine,
going to a party, but keep getting.
You know,
invited.
I used to have things where you could put a little
send
new product
and stuff.
And
you shit talk them.
No, we were like, we didn't name any of the ones we shit talked. But they used to always send stuff on Valentine's Day, so you'd get like flowers and stuff, and people would be like, "Wow, Alice!" I'm like, "Yeah, really popular." Let's pretend it was. I remember one year
really loved me
there
were
all
year.
These mysterious roses from an anonymous person to various like people, and I was at the Herald or something. No, everyone like I was like, "This is from a PR, definitely," because I was like, "There's no one who's sending me a single rose. I'm not that kind of girl, sadly." But all sorts of, like journalists around the company were like, "Oh my god, someone sent me a rose!"
Oh so wow,
it's a PR, mate. Like, don't get too excited.
Or just run with it.
Yeah,
and feel great about the fact that you got a red rose from somewhere.
Oh well, yeah, exactly.
And are you going out to dinner this year, Sophie? I know David takes you to really odd places on Valentine's Day.
We are actually not. He's going to go down to Hamilton on Saturday. Is Valentine's Day Sunday? Yeah. Well, I just looked. Bar Celeste doing like a little oyster situation. That could be fun.
People like Cazador's doing something. Quite a lot of cool places are doing cool Valentine's stuff.
I thought about surprising him with something, but I haven't really got very far. He's already going to do golf this week and other things.
That sounds romantic.
I actually bought him some golf shoes for his birthday, which I was suggested by one of the people that he plays golf with a lot, because he apparently limps around in shoes that are too small for him. And he didn't really want them. He's like, "My shoes are fine, thanks anyway." So
ungrateful.
Yeah.
Surprise him with some oysters at Celeste.
Yeah. Maybe I'll just do that.
Really enjoying oysters this summer. I've found the way that I think oysters like capture an experience. I think it's like catching a wave body surfing. You know, salty freshness and
love that.
Where have the best oysters that you've eaten this summer been?
I had some last week on Friday night at Lillian.
Yes.
And we were served by Hugo, and I was too shy to be like, "Hello, you're on my podcast," but I wasn't there.
I mean,
I was also a bit
that
drunk.
Chat wouldn't be that great.
Nah.
Anyway, what would he say next?
I don't know.
Yeah.
I thought he might give me some free food or something.
I see.
You should have milked
too
it.
Shy to try and get free food.
Yeah. No, it was great though. I had yummy te matuku oysters from Waiheke.
They're so yum.
I like them, and I like how they're small, because I'm not into the massive bluffies, because I'm a bit, you know, funny about, I'm, you know, I'm pretty much vegetarian, but I love a little te matuku.
Yeah, I think they're delicious as well. We had some at the Oyster Inn. We go there for our wedding anniversary, because we got married there, and we went in the afternoon and just shared a dozen oysters. And I adore the first oyster, and then I love the second one a bit less, and they sort of start to fade out. So I'm not like would never smash a dozen oysters.
Yeah,
but I ate all six of them and really loved every one of them. So that was kind of like
I'm
a
more
milestone.
Of a, a couple of oysters do me.
Yeah,
I always order two.
Mm.
You know, that's
See, David could do a dozen. The people that really love them just can't. Yeah. It's like it goes the other way for them. They enjoy the second one more than the first one, and the third one more than the second. It's interesting.
People who get a bit over the top about it and will have like 100.
Yeah,
I feel like that's like a flex. You know, that's not real. It's people who go on all like, "I've had 92 oysters."
Yeah,
like,
what's in your tummy? Like, imagine that.
Get ridden up on put on a honours board or some shit in a pub. Yeah. You know, I can't remember where they're from. Maybe Mahurangi, but it was at the engine room, also on my wedding anniversary. So it's a great way to start.
Yeah.
Although Millie doesn't eat them, but
do you know what is so good about the engine room and their oysters, which I only realised after I contrasted it to the time that I had oysters before that, is that they're sitting on ice. Like, oysters need to be really cold.
Yeah.
And it's actually really gross when they're sitting on some sort of salt and you pick it up and it's like warm fish.
Yeah, agreed.
It's just not great. Like, we had some really yummy oysters and some Coromandel ones when we were in Matarangi a few weekends ago. They're just kind of delicious all over the country when they're cold and served. I'm a really strong mignonette fan.
Yeah, same.
Lucky enough to have been sent by a friend at St. Alice a dozen oysters the other day and a bottle of Chardonnay, And what a fucking combo.
Alice, where is your PR like that?
Exactly.
Where did it arrive to the office or to the house?
No, to the table at St. Alice.
Oh, right.
Got it sent to
We were sitting there, and I think they might have actually been sent over to David because he was waiting for Rachel Craig and I. But by the time I sat down, there was oysters with mignonette and there was a bottle of Chardonnay. So thank you very much to Deeds and Maya.
Kia ora, my name's Duncan Grieve and I'm managing editor at The Spinoff. This podcast, like so much of the work we do at The Spinoff, is made possible by the support of our members. To find out more about The Spinoff members and how you can help us keep producing quality, independent journalism, visit members.thespinoff.co.nz today.
This podcast is in danger of becoming incredibly bougie for this episode, going from Antoine's to
oysters.
To oysters. Can we go lowbrow?
Let's take it humble.
What is the most humble, delicious food you've had over summer? I think I found the best fish and chips in New Zealand, is in Akaroa.
Oh, blue cod.
Murphy's fish and chip joint.
Yeah.
A little bit hidden away at the back
fish
of the little...
Fish and chips aren't exactly cheap anymore, so.
Yeah, but they're humble.
They're not posh.
There's nothing in New Zealand that's cheap if you want to eat.
Mm. No, but I think it's really interesting that we have this. It's another question of people expecting something that used to be the case. I'm doing some work with Scott, who owns the Fishsmith, and like I can tell you right now, no one is making a lot of money off fish, but people expect cheap. So if they want cheap, it has to be frozen hokey. But in Akaroa, having blue cod fish and chips the day after your wedding was the best fish and chips I've ever had in my life.
Blue cod is the best fish and chips I've ever had ever. Was on Stewart Island.
Right.
That was a real funny experience where, you know, you paid like $40 and had a scoop and a piece of fish and chips. Then Gwen, the local, comes in and picks up the order she had placed on her phone and sort of walking out and about to break her back, and she had handed over a 20. So very much local and tourist prices. I appreciate that. I'm down. I don't mind.
Yeah.
But it was a funny experience and so delicious.
I think if the quality matches, it's like, you know what you're paying for. You've got no problem.
You're also on Stewart Island. Like, you're getting an entire experience.
Yes. We had fish and chips at the weekend from the Opononi Hotel in the Hokkien Harbour.
I love it.
Did you get the Opo burger?
No. That
was recommended to me by some locals.
Has that got a power fritter in it?
Yes.
Has that got dolphin in it?
So that's something we didn't get to. There's a couple of things we didn't get to, but it's just there's lots to do up there, isn't there?
Yeah.
We had a delicious mussel, a creamy mussel and leek pie at the Boat Shed Cafe in Rawini.
Oh, I love that place.
About you, Alice?
Well, look, what have
Marmite
I eaten?
Marmite and chip sandwich?
Yeah, I feel like I did have a Marmite and chip
really?
Sandwich. I think I did. I literally was just thinking about that. I think we had one day and I took a photo of it. So, yeah, I had a Marmite and chip sandwich with fresh white bread. That was good. I've just eaten a lot of chips, potato chips, beer and chips. Just fucking love chips. Any kind.
Again, not cheap, but I think humble is watermelon. There's a shortage this year because we haven't been able to import.
Yeah, they're so expensive. We bought one for like $20.
But we've already talked about this about 2 years ago, probably in one of the first episodes ever. But Cliff's organic farm from Hamilton comes up to the Parnell Farmers Market every week, and they have the best watermelon in the entire world, in my opinion. They're so sweet.
Saturday?
Ooh.
Saturday mornings.
That's me.
8
week.
Till 12.
I've eaten quite a lot of fish caught by my family and myself.
Very cost effective.
Yeah.
I've actually talked to fishermen about this. Not cost effective.
Oh, if you include the petrol.
And the boat and the time.
Catching it off the shore, which we weren't, but if you were. So we're having like ikamata and
edible
snapper.
Fish off the wharf? Does that even happen?
In
some people.
Or Mapiti. There was a bunch of people fishing off the end of the wharf.
Very long wharf.
And I went and said, "What are you catching?" And the woman said, "Snapper, trevally, kahawai."
I was like,
whoa!
But like all fish is edible. It's just, you know.
Whether you want to eat it or not?
Whether, you know, well, we've got very
limited knowledge.
Limited view of what fish, you know, as Pākehā.
Well, there's a that's that whole Sanford Foods campaign about eating the lesser known fish. And I started doing it because I get off on like the $2 piece of ling that you can put in your fish curry.
Yeah.
It's absolutely delicious. It's
I didn't even have blue cod at the Akaroa Fish and Chip. I had elephant fish.
Elephant Did you? Fish?
Mm. Yeah. And
Google
so
that guy.
Camille, who works with me, is also encouraging Scott at Fishmouth to have a lesser known fish as the cheaper alternative because that might push people to order it and then to understand the cost difference.
It's delicious still.
Yeah, yeah. A lot of them are.
Oh, I had some good humble Mexican food on Waiheke. There's a new little pop-up called Tacos y Masa.
Oh, yeah?
And they make like all home handmade tacos and chilaquiles.
Oh, yeah.
And it's good?
Yeah. I thought it was real good.
Chilaquiles was not my favourite thing in Mexico.
What is that?
It's like, is it like broken up?
It's like a soggy tortilla? Taco.
It's like a soggy tacos. Yeah, my dad got the pig face one and he didn't like it. But, you know, I got some lovely tacos.
Pig face is in like the cheeks and the...
Yeah. And I got a yum cheese tamale and I got a jalapeno popper. That was good. So, yeah, Marco's tacos y masa on Waiheke.
Sounds delicious.
I've been a lot. I'd cooked quite a lot when we went up north, like big salads and stuff. My dad's had a very good tomato crop this year. Been eating a lot of that.
I love cooking over the summer holiday. There's so,
Same.
So
Just
much
when you've
fun.
Got time.
Yeah, you have that time and you have a mandate and you often have an audience.
Yeah.
You know, you've got people to, you've got lots
quite
of
easy.
People to serve.
Yeah, like I made these big salads that my family was very impressed with and it's like, it's not that hard, but you know. A lot of stone fruit, putting like
Nancy Silverton
nectarines
talked to me about
salads.
How salads need to be heroed more. They can they can be so good, but so simple.
Yeah.
Just like some cos lettuce, some, you know, red onion you've pickled, some parmesan, some almonds, some hazelnuts, and you're away.
Yeah.
And you look so impressive, but it's so simple.
True.
Yeah, I've been really getting into the leafy green salad. I think if you know how to make a good dressing, it's the perfect accompaniment to any barbecued anything, whether it's a meat or vegetable.
And a good dressing can be lemon juice, olive oil, and salt and pepper.
Like,
depending on what you're doing. It's so easy.
And then I found that I was just making the same vinaigrette, which I've often do with like Chardonnay vinegar, sometimes a bit of Dijon, but olive oil, salt, pepper. And then I started like riffing on that. Call me wild, but you know, put a garlic clove in, totally changes the game.
Crazy.
Or put a teaspoon of honey in, and it completely changes the salad too. So you can actually almost have the same salad 4 nights in a row with 4 different dressings, and it's bloody delish.
Mm.
You, Sophie, can't stop talking about your garlic press. Can you tell me about that?
Oh my God. It's honestly the best thing that I'm not even typically one for a garlic press, but what I think is that if you're cooking large amounts of food or cooking for large groups of people, whether or not you like it, you do spend quite a lot of time peeling garlic and chopping it. So it's a garlic press which has got the worst name in the world. It's called Garject because it has an ejection mechanism for the skin. So you put,
even pun queen Alice can't get down with Garject.
Garject.
So you put you put like 3 or 4 garlic cloves in it. It's really heavy. It's like German steel. And then you squeeze it with ease because it's so well made.
Yeah.
Out comes the garlic. And then you open it up the other way and it's got a black side with holes in it that goes into the bit that the garlic just came through and pushes it all out. And then it's got a button you push and it ejects the skin. So you could do like 12 garlic cloves in like 1 minute.
Sounds quite fun.
See,
it's so good.
I almost feel like you're missing out if your fingers don't smell like garlic.
Yeah.
Well, the other thing is that when you bend it backwards and it cleans out the holes that the garlic just went through, it also flicks it over a little thing. So you don't even need to touch it. It just goes boop and all the garlic, crushed garlic comes off.
Can you bring it in next time and we play with it?
Quite amazing.
I have this weird memory from being at a Bekronga concert in Dunedin where I was just found myself sniffing my fingers because I'd been chopping garlic earlier that night. I love that smell.
And now whenever you hear Bekronga, do you like smell garlic?
No, now whenever I sniff my fingers, I think of Bekronga.
Oh, okay. She'd love that, I'm sure.
I got this really amazing cookbook from my sister for Christmas and I've noticed that it's it's quite simple in its makeup in that you can pretty much make stuff from what you've got normally. Mm. So if you've got some tomatoes at home, one of the things they made was a dish that's kind of, well, tonnato is like a tuna mayonnaise.
Yeah.
Vitello tonnato is the veal dish that's famous with that. But this was vitello tomato. So anyway.
Oh, what book is that? I feel like I've seen that.
Danielle Alvarez. It's called Always Add Lemon.
Oh, maybe
God,
not.
It's good. Anyway, like, make a delicious mayonnaise that's kind of on the same theme as making a great dressing, and then you just cut tomatoes and put them on top of it.
Yeah.
Like, grill some bread as well. And it's, like, this delicious, you know, tuna's got that really savoury kind of, like, umami flavour. And then with tomatoes, just so delicious. Like, little...
It all sings to me about summer. Like, I don't think we appreciate how much fun it is, more fun it is to eat in summer.
Oh, yeah. Do you know what we did on New Year's Eve? A big paella, and we did them on the barbecue.
Yeah.
And it was just
like... Just put the dish on the...
Yeah, straight on the... Yeah, we had two. They were side by side. And I did, like, I've got a whole book on paella, so I, like, read through it, decided what I was doing, made the sofrito, grated all the tomatoes. Like, you can do a lot of it in advance, so it's really fun, which is probably what it's for, like a party kind of environment. And then you just leave it. And so you basically just let it cook down for an hour, the sofrito. Yeah. And we just did that, hanging out with everyone. And then... In goes the rest of the stuff, and it's like 35 minutes from there. And it was so delicious.
How do you guys use recipes? Because I've found that I really struggle with meal kits because they're so prescriptive.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I can't handle the look at that little printed out sheet and then go back to my dish, back to the sheet and back to my dish. What I'll do if I'm using a recipe, and this obviously won't work for baking and probably why I don't bake, but I'll read it at work, maybe read a few like around it, do some supplementary reading and sort of put three together for the dish I'm wanting to make, and then not read it again and just get the ingredients list. And
opposite of me.
And then I just can't, I use it as inspiration and guidance for the bits I don't know or understand.
Which is totally a then reasonable proposition.
I will not go back to it over and over
with
again.
With savoury cooking. And I think it depends on who wrote the recipes and how much you trust them. Because if I'm cooking from someone's recipe that I really respect, then I'm cooking exactly what they tell me to do. Yeah. Because I believe that the end result will be better if I stick to what they would do.
I do a bit of both. Sometimes I often Google recipes for inspiration and then just use it like Simon would. But yeah, say if I'm cooking from a recipe, and probably because I've spent a lot of time editing recipes in past jobs, I'm quite interested in how they explain stuff, and I like...
Real art to writing recipes, eh?
Yeah, there is. And always, you know when they're like...
Recipe testing's a very particular thing.
Sauté the onions for 5 minutes until translucent. It's like, that's not fucking 5 minutes, man. That's going to take 15. 20, maybe.
But also, I think because of being involved in that process as well, I have a lot of respect for the recipe. Because I know that it's been tried.
Tested.
What if we did 3 minutes? What if we did 5 minutes? Yeah. What if we did 7 minutes? Or what if we did two onions? What if we did one? And all of that's been tried. Mm. And the answer was... that they decided to do it this way.
Yeah.
And, you know, everyone's got different tastes, but for me, I'm just like, nothing makes me feel like I know better than Jamie Oliver's squad of people that have put together. You know, I do it the way that he intended, always the first time.
Yeah.
And then if I want to riff on it, I'll do that next time.
Yeah.
And Sophie, you've been hosting some really fun events at the Village, basically giving people lessons on how to cook different
courses. We've been doing a series called The Art of Cooking, and it's really interesting. So the first one was Hercules Noble teaching everyone how to make sourdough.
And great name.
There's strong so name, many sexy sourdough bakers, bread bakers. Eh?
Yeah.
It's like he's been formed out of some sort of factory that would make a sourdough baker instructor.
Like,
let's call him Hercules Noble.
Yeah. And he's really great, and he discovered his love for sourdough in lockdown. He actually does catering as well. But the thing that I thought was quite interesting about that is that I thought sourdough, the trend, was kind of lockdown related and had come and gone. But his class basically sold out.
Yeah, well, I think it's been a growing trend for a while.
Yeah.
The trend happened before lockdown,
and
then everyone like went bonkers.
Yeah,
well,
and
think
then it's held on because it is...
For me, I got really into it because I wasn't near... Like, we're spoilt in Auckland for choice. I'm not going to make sourdough in Auckland when I can go down the road and get it for like $7, you know. But we were in lockdown in a remote place where we couldn't, yeah, so I had motivation. Anyway, so Hercules taught everyone to make sourdough, and he does some cool stuff, like he's doing a sweet one that's got orange and chocolate in it.
Ooh,
so it's chocolate bread. It's way better than a bloody donut or a croissant, if you ask me, with chocolate.
Yeah.
And then the second one was Sam Mannering doing puddings. It was the art of dessert, and he's really, I mean, he's got billions of recipes on stuff for having written a column over the years. And he did some quite interesting, he did a tart tartan, he did a cobbler.
Yeah.
What's a cobbler?
Well, I'd love to know what the origin is, but to me it's like a British origin thing, which
I thought
like,
it was American.
Oh, is it?
Peach cobbler.
Oh my God.
Isn't it like, it's kind of like a crumble with like a scone topping, isn't it?
No, well, it's fruit with a kind of scone topping. You basically make a batter with flour and then you spoon it on top of the fruit and then bake it. But Sam's one was actually the other way around. So he made the batter, put it at the bottom with butter, and then spooned the fruit on top of that. And as it cooked, the batter kind of cooked up through the fruit. Very, very sweet, but cool to learn how to do. And then he did like a Japanese souffle cheesecake. So some brilliant person in Japan, because they do everything so perfectly, got the cheesecake from America and the souffle from France and put them together. And
genius.
It only had like 80 grams of sugar in it, so it's like way more to my taste. Like I found a cobbler really sweet. And it had, you just, it's like a whippy situation, and then you bake it and serve it with raspberries, and it was great.
Yeah. Do you want to know about the history of cobblers?
I do, please.
Originated in the British American colonies.
Oh, does that mean we're both right?
Yeah. English settlers settlers were unable to make traditional suet puddings due to lack of suitable ingredients and cooking equipment, so instead covered a stewed filling with a layer of uncooked plain biscuits, scone batter, or dumplings.
Cool.
I'd love to do more historical reading about food, because
it's fascinating. Like,
how did someone come up with cheese, you know?
Just with like, beer. Like,
my mum always says it was a brave man that first ate a raw oyster.
Sure, yeah.
You know?
No, but that's, you would have had to.
Yeah.
Raw oysters were eaten ages ago because people were hungry and didn't know how to cook.
I think cheese went from when I did a cheese course once. I think it was like them carrying around milk and they're like those little baggy things and it, there's some story and then it kind of,
that
you
looks
know,
like a colonoscopy bag.
Yeah, I'm just sort of doing something with my hand that makes it, yeah.
It's
lucky.
And then, okay, we had another one last night, which was with Tracy Sean Bennett, which was called The Art of Plant-Based Cooking.
Yeah.
As you guys know, I had a bit of a vegan stint last year, so I was interested in that.
You're our in-house Duncan Garner.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it didn't last all that long
because of the second lockdown.
Yeah. But I thought that it was Tracy Sean Bennett. She's called The Reckless Foodie, and she made some really delicious things. She did a scrambled tofu. She did a brown rice salad, and she made a chocolate macaroon. And I thought, you know, I spent a lot of my time cooking, and I still learnt a lot. Good. And then last of all is next week we've got Polly Marcus from Miss Polly's Kitchen. And she's doing the art of dinner parties. So she's going to demonstrate what she would cook if she was hosting a dinner party. And I think there are still tickets to that one.
It is such an art as well, doing cooking for, say, 10 people. Making it delicious but not stressing yourself out.
Yeah.
Yes.
I find cooking for anyone other than myself stressful.
I don't.
I just don't do it enough. No, I did. Like, I'm fine with cooking for family and stuff, but as soon as...
But Alice, you're actually quite a good cook, and
I just,
a lot of people are not, so you should probably just go into it.
So when I have, like, friends around, I just want to drink and stuff, and then I get distracted and I'm scared I'll mess up my dinner.
Honestly, the paella was perfect for that. You get it all ready before they get there. It's kind of simmering away, and by the time it was ready to serve, I mean, I was arguably too drunk to enjoy it.
Let's go get some tickets to The Art of the Dinner Party with Miss Polly's Kitchen. That's at The Village. What's the website address?
Thevillagenz.com.
Great.
Very nice to have you all back in the room.
Nice to be here.
Happy Valentine's Day.
Happy Galentine's Day, Sophie and Tina.
Is it called Galentine's? That's so good.
That's from, I don't know, some program.
I'm into that.
Yeah.
It's such a fucking disgusting tradition.
Yeah, screwed men. Galentine's.
Fuck the patriarchy.
Yeah, fuck the patriarchy.
Dudes are dicks.
I'll see you for an oyster on Sunday.
Woohoo.
Let's do it.
Okay. Thanks, everyone. Thanks, Tina.
Thanks, Tina.
Well done, Antoine's.
Yeah, good
what
on
a
you.
Stint.
Take a bow.
Yeah.
Ready to rediscover the joys of cycling? With over 300 kilometres of cycle paths across Tāmaki Makaurau, jumping on your bike and going for a ride is such a fun way to discover the city from a different perspective. Cycling is getting more and more popular across Auckland, so now's a great time to join the hype and give cycling a go. Head to at.govt/cycling to find your nearest cycleway today.
Hello for Lover. I'm Madeline Chapman, editor at The Spin-Off. If you have the means, consider supporting our high-quality journalism by becoming a Spin-Off member. Sign up now at thespinoff.co.nz/donate.
The Spin-Off Podcast Network.